All right, City Council will...
Whoa, you're already here.
City Council will...
I wasn't usually to call you up.
Thank you for being efficient. Sorry, City Council will warn you. Come back from recess. So if our colleagues could make their way back to the City Council chamber... Mm-hmm. We have to wait for one more. Mm-hmm. What's your, how much time do you think is your presentation?
Presentation's probably no more than 10 minutes, and you have about three people, I think, testifying. Okay.
Just give a sense for, we have one more council item. So there's... Council is back from recess, we are ready to hear. Time certain for 3:00, and Carla, can you please read the council calendar title for 3:00?
Item 908, direct the Bureau of Development Services to apply existing city environmental zoning regulations to certain land use reviews until the city achieves full compliance with Title 13, Nature and Neighborhoods, of the Metro Urban Growth Management Function Plan.
So I had this great introduction, but for the sake of time, we're going to turn it directly over to you, and I'm exhausted.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, members of the council.
We'll thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your testimony, Mayor.
Are we done?
Statement to Carla, she'll put on the record.
I'd like to call the question.
Sorry, we're a little rummy.
That's
go ahead.
Okay. We'll try to be brief. I'm Roberta Jortner, and I manage the Environmental Planning Program for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And with me is Kimberly Talent, who manages the Land Division and Environmental Review Section for the Bureau of Development Services. This ordinance is required to comply with Title 13 of Metro's Urban Growth Management Functional Plan, also known as Nature in the Neighborhoods program. We are recommending the council adopt the ordinance as an emergency, effective immediately on passage.
And, the reason for that is?
The reason for that is that the deadline for which the city is supposed to be implementing this program was in May, and it's time we get the program in place.
Okay.
So we'll do a brief overview of Title 13 and of the ordinance proposal. Metro adopted Title 13 in late 2005, and the program is intended to establish minimum regional requirements to protect and restore the region's riparian quarters and wildlife habitat, and also to augment Metro's Title 3 program to protect water quality. Developing Title 13 took several years and involved extensive scientific literature review and collaboration with regional and national experts, other cities and counties, states and federal agencies, and property owners. And I'd like to note that Metro did notify all affected property owners before adopting a regional inventory, a map of Title 13 habitat conservation areas, which is actually in front of you here on the floor and also in your packet, and rules to ensure that these areas were not adversely affected by development or mitigated if impacts occur. Cities and counties may use both regulatory and non-regulatory tools to comply with Title 13 and are encouraged to adopt area-specific district plans that reflect local unique circumstances also to comply with Title 13, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So how does this play out in Portland? Metro established roughly 12,000 acres of Title 13 habitat conservation areas in Portland, representing about a third of these habitat areas in the region. And West Haden Island adds another 800 acres of habitat conservation area that the city needs to attend to as we proceed. These areas essentially contain Portland's rivers, streams, wetlands, floodplains, and vegetated riparian corridors. These areas provide stream flow conveyance and flood protection. They stabilize slopes and prevent landslides. They reduce pollution and cool air and water. They capture carbon and other greenhouse gases, and they provide fish and wildlife habitat, including for species at risk. Portland, the city of Portland, was an active critic and supporter during the Metro process, ranging from staff participation in technical committees to the mayor and council members' participation in the Metro Policy Advisory Committee. And it's notable that the city adopted its first watershed management plan about the same time as Title 13 was adopted. Both Title 13 and Portland's watershed management plan are based on principles that call for protecting these types of areas as the first priority in restoring urban watersheds and in protecting city and community investments. So why do we need this ordinance? Well, in 2007, the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development reviewed the 27,000 pages of ordinance and public record that Metro submitted to it and adopted Title 13 as the region's program to meet parts of Goal 5 and 6 for natural resources and water quality. This established a January 2009 deadline for compliance. And currently, Portland is largely in compliance with Title 13. And you can see on this map that the areas crosshatched in green are the city's existing environmental and other resource overlay zones. These existing overlay zones apply to more than 80% of the areas that Metro identified as important under Title 13. The city's land acquisition, education, and stewardship programs also contribute. But still, more than 20 miles of the city's rivers and streams, more than 115 acres of wetlands, and more than 2,200 acres of the habitat conservation areas are outside city overlay zones and are at risk of being developed. The city has asked Metro to approve a 2-year time extension and phase strategy to achieve full compliance with Title 13. The steps include updating the city's natural resources inventories, which are significantly out of date, completing specific projects that will, among other things, address Title 13, including the river plan for the Willamette Corridor, the Airport Futures Project, plans for East and West Haden Island, the citywide tree project. We're also going to be asking the council to consider later in the year initial baseline standards for streams and wetlands throughout the city to be in place while Portland is updating the plans for the rest of Portland's watersheds. implementation of the Urban Forestry Action Plan, the Gray to Green Initiative, and the Climate Action Plan will also contribute to compliance. Metro Council has not taken action officially on the city's request yet, but we understand they will be holding a work session later this year. They will consider Portland's request as well as requests from several other municipalities. The hope is to complete these projects and to bring the city into substantial compliance within the two-year extension period. However, until the city can reach full compliance, Metro requires the direct application of Title 13 requirements during certain types of land use reviews, and that's what this ordinance is primarily about. And Kimberly will talk a little bit about the types of cases that would trigger this ordinance. Metro requires the city meet these requirements either by applying the code that Metro developed to assist local governments or some set of comparative provisions. Staff believes that the city's existing resource overlay programs embody the fundamental components of Title 13 and that it would be simpler, more equitable, and less costly than apply the city's existing programs than applying Metro's model code on top of the city's existing overlay zones or in other parts of the city and essentially having two different programs going at once. Metro supports this approach, as is indicated in their letter of June 12th to the council. So by adopting this ordinance, the council would affirm this position and its intent to use the proposed approach outlined in Exhibit G to meet Metro's requirement. What does this mean for property owners? In reality, the ordinance will have limited impact on the ground, which Kim will discuss. Still, adopting this ordinance expresses the city's continued support for the Title 13 Nature and Neighborhoods Program and its regional partners. And the ordinance also directs the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to come back to you at the end of the year and report on our progress towards compliance with the program. So, Kimberly, would you like to add some?
Sure. I'm Kimberly Talent with Bureau Development Services. I'll briefly explain how we'll implement this this plan. We currently have Title 13 Habitat Conservation Area maps available to planners in the Development Services Center, so we can provide information to customers about the habitat conservation area boundaries. Since these regulations only apply when a land use review is proposed for a use not allowed in the base zone, BDS expects to see relatively few cases where application of the regulations will be required. Those land use reviews are outlined in Exhibit G, and they include things like a zone change, a conditional use master plan, a comprehensive plan map amendment, other reviews related to uses. Proposals triggering this requirement will have the option to meet a set of standards or go through a land use review. These applicants are already going through a larger land use review process, so an environmental greenway or Pleasant Valley resource review would only be part of a larger land use review. We will process these applications as environmental greenway or Pleasant Valley resource reviews and apply the related land use review fees. Some of the reviews may require development to not be located within a habitat conservation area or may require mitigation plantings to offset impacts to those areas. Based on an inquiry from a stakeholder that we received, BPS and BDS have submitted an amendment to Exhibit G that you should have, and that was intended to clarify that BDS will consider additional information on the type, location, and condition of natural resources on a site during the land use review. So while BDS cannot make amendments to Metro's map and habitat conservation area boundary, BDS can consider additional information to evaluate the impact analysis, evaluation of alternatives, and development of mitigation plans and conditions of approval.
Do I hear a motion to submit the amendment?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the roll on the amendment submitted by the Bureau?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Do we know when we're going to get this back? Will we get to see what those will look like?
Which piece is
the BDS additional information? How are you going to consider additional information and such?
Oh, so usually how that occurs is an applicant will provide a professional assessment from an appropriate scientist explaining what the resources present are on the site, and then we would go out and ground truth them and see if those resources were in fact on the site or not. So if the applicant were then proposing development within that habitat conservation area, and we found that those resources really weren't present there, we would be able to approve development in those locations.
Okay, thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment is approved. Further briefing? Any questions from council? Let's go to the sign-up sheets.
Five people signed up to testify. First three, please come on up, are Dixie Johnston, Steve Pfeiffer, and Jason Howard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to City Council. We're glad you're here. Thanks for waiting.
Mr. Pfeiffer, are you here to denounce us or to serve us with a tort claim notice?
I am here with good news.
Okay. Ms. Johnston. Why don't we have you go first?
Be as yes on both of those questions.
Ms. Johnston, why don't you go first?
Okay, I am Dixie Johnston. My husband and I are co-land use chairs of Collins View Neighborhood Association, and we are also very proud volunteers at Tryon Creek State Park. We are nature guides, and we wholeheartedly endorse this ordinance. We think the city staff has done a great job putting this together. This has been a project that they've been working on for many, many years. I cannot improve at all on the statements that Roberta and Kimberly have made, but to add more emphasis, an additional reminder that the riparian, wetland, and wildlife areas do overlap with flood and landslide areas. These flood and landslide areas have been known here in this city for well over 100 years, so we're not talking about just saving a few fish here. We are protecting people's property, and we might even protect people's lives. The implementation of Title 13 is doable, it's easy, and it works. Dave and I, in our own yard, have trying to apply some of these things. We've taken nature in the neighborhood classes with naturescaping, and we find it very easy. As you know, my age is showing, and I'm not all that big, but I'm out there yanking the ivy. And it's no problem. My health has improved, by the way, because of that. We still have a long way to go, both in my own yard, but also citywide. And what it is required, above all else, is the political will of City Council to support this and to also encourage more public education. This ordinance will help our city's sustainability goals become reality. We are the nation's leader in this area, and it's a good investment for the future. Please support your staff. And out of respect to Mike Houck, I'd like to add that wild in this city is a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnston. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, my name is Jason Howard, and I'm a volunteer and vice chair with the Johnson Creek Watershed Council. I'm also a chair of the Land Use Committee. And I'm here today to generally support the interim ordinance, and specifically in regards to the update of the natural resource inventory, as well as adopting the minimum standards for the unprotected streams and wetlands. And as I'm sure all of you know, Johnson Creek has borne its fair share of development in the last 10 years, and being water quality limited for temperature and turbidity as a function of legacy pollutants as well. And so we appreciate the existing Pleasant Valley environmental and greenway overlays, but it doesn't go far enough to meet the minimum requirements of Title 13. It's acknowledged in the ordinance. It goes about 80% of the way. And so we just highly urge the city to go beyond the minimum title requirements of Title 13 in the future, beyond just Clean Water Act, and then also to address Endangered Species Act protections. And my day job, I'm a professional hydrogeologist, and the use of these types of programs is a natural extension of the stormwater system. Is it penny wise and pound foolish? Is the big pipe the alternative? And so I just can't urge you to move fastly enough to adopt this ordinance, actually to meet the requirements of Title 13. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, Steve Pfeiffer, here today as on a process point and as an applicant. And it has to do with the very issue of the amendment. I have a letter into you that requests something very similar. And it really does, I think, benefit both the public and the private applicants in the sense that just as we have in the E-Zone today, the ability to ground truth what we find as opposed to what we saw a number of years earlier at 30,000 feet is critical. It works very well to the city's advantage, to ours, to BDS's. And so I encourage the amendment. Secondly, I'll make a process point that this is the second time for me in 2 weeks where the Bureau of Planning and BDS both have been remarkably responsive to concerns that we've expressed. Earlier it was in the Hayden Island Plan District, and yet again today. I started this conversation just a few days ago with Eric, and when I walked in today, without even having seen my letter, I saw the language in the amendment, which, you know, with a few word changes, was something I would have written myself. So it's very responsive, and I applaud him for that. The third point would be as a process question I mentioned to Catherine. This puts the city, and at least in my from my frame of mind, an applicant on a very solid place to go forward and implement both Title 13 and Chapter 430 of the E-Zones. I'd really urge you to get a letter or some form of affirmative response from Metro that they see this in turn as complying with Title 13 as well. You may have it, but the point is when an applicant shows up before you with a map amendment, there is a requirement that they demonstrate compliance and therefore the city demonstrate compliance if it's approved with the functional plan. This is a way of assuring that that compliance is in place. And not to suggest that Metro would reverse course, I really would want to know that when you make that finding in reliance upon this ordinance, that everybody at Metro also agrees that this does serve to make that the case and that you're not going to have to worry about whether you've met 13 or not. I think it's very clear. I'd just love to see it affirmed. With that, that's all I have.
Good suggestion.
So the amendment satisfies your concern? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It does, Commissioner.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Carla?
Last two are Jim Labby and Linda Robinson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Labby. Ms. Robinson, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, City Council. My name is Jim Labby with Audubon Society of Portland. And I'm here today to support the resolution, the ordinance before you, and to say that we have we've been an active participant in this process for over a decade, myself personally, and actually more than a decade for my colleague Mike Houck. And it's been a long process. We've gone on field trips with public officials. We've been on committees. We've gone to hearings. I've danced and sung music to the Metro Council about this program, the Nature Neighborhood Program. So it's
where's our dance?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I should have
taken us for granted.
I should have brought the guitar. I'll do that
when you want to dance.
Final decision. We'll do that. So I really urge the city to move forward quickly. It'd be nice if we were doing this all adopting it today, but I think we're on a track to come into compliance and hopefully exceed compliance and reach the city's goals for its watershed plan and many of the city's goals for livable, dense urban communities. And I have to emphasize, I'm involved in these issues all across the region, and what Portland does and when it does it matters a lot to the other jurisdictions that are looking to Portland for model code, for ideas, and for leading in these areas of ecological site design and development that enhances the built natural environment. To emphasize three things, or a few things that I would highlight in here, I think that the update of the inventory, the new inventory is going to be critical. I fully support that. The new baseline protection for unprotected streams and wetlands is absolutely critical. As we make, we're starting to transition our investments from gray to green. This is really about safeguarding those investments in the most basic way. These smaller streams are critical to overall watershed health, to a number of goals, the city's goals. And I'm going to be suggesting that when we get to the point of adopting those baseline streams or developing those, we really need to be at least meeting the standards, those baseline standards for unprotected streams and wetlands need to be at least what we adopted under Title III back in the mid-90s. I would think that would be the baseline. That would be the standard for baseline. The interim measures are obviously there's something you have to do, something we should do. And finally, I think that the link to the citywide tree project the staff mentioned is going to be really important as an overall strategy. So thank you. I'll be back with my guitar. All right.
Promises. Thanks.
He's leaving for a while. I'm Linda Robinson. I'm here as a citizen who lives in Outer East Portland. I, too, would like to state my support for the ordinance and for the amendment. If nothing else, we have some small streams and small wetlands, too small to be included in the metro inventory, and that were missed when they did the city's environmental overlay. Little short segments, feeder streams to the Columbia Slough. I've been involved with the Columbia Slough Watershed Council since it started. And so this will at least give, under some development situations, some consideration to those. But as Jim said, that baseline inventory update is going to be critical to include and put some protection on all those small streams that haven't been protected yet. And as I served on the citywide tree code project with Jim as well, and I see moving forward with that as a critical part to actually complying with the Title 13, you know, as well. So I just wanted to emphasize those. And it says they will be finished in 2009, but I'm not sure, given that the funding was cut back away, so if that's realistic. But hopefully as soon as possible, we can get those pieces in place as well.
Thank you all.
I believe it's on track for code adoption this fall.
Good. We haven't seen a draft of it yet.
There'll be some budgetary issues probably that will spill over to the next budget, but I'm pretty sure it's on track for fall.
Code will be adopted. The manual will be a little longer.
The manual will come later.
A little longer, yeah. But the code will be in place. Thank you. All right. Unless there's additional council questions of staff, Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish?
Thanks for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yeah, good work. Pleased to support it. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, a lot of long-time good work from the Bureau of Planning. Thank you very much, and it's good to see the folks from the community coming in to support it. I appreciate that very much. Aye.
Roberta Kimberly, thank you for your great work.
Aye.
It's approved. That gets us to our last item, which is council calendar item. Second reading, vote only, 901. Can you please read the title?
Mm-hmm. Approve the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to expand boundaries by a net 41.98 acres, increase maximum indebtedness by approximately $325 million, and extend expiration date to June 30, 2021. Fish?
By my calculation, we are in our 11th hour in a 24-hour cycle of council. I think we've set something of a record, and as my blood sugar is declining, is plummeting, I see the mayor is having lunch, and that just doesn't seem fair. So I want to begin by saying that we had a very good public hearing on this. Was it a week or 2 weeks ago? With a lot of public testimony, and I think we now have a full record. But there, because of the significance of this issue, I want to make a few comments. The first has to do with the past. I was not on the council when this matter was originally adopted, but it's now come on a amended. We are now once again acting on an amendment to the district, and I have been reflecting on some of the history of this exercise, and in particular three criticisms that were leveled against the council in the past, which I think are relevant to our action today. The first was a criticism that we had not sufficiently established blight within the district as a whole. That was an issue that we've heard from a number of groups, including the League of Women Voters, and it was an issue that LUBA highlighted in its decision and remand back to the council. After the hearing that we've had on this matter and review of the extensive record of blight, which has been put together in this amended plan, I am now satisfied that we meet the statutory test of establishing blight in the district as a whole. One of the interesting things that came out of the hearing is that there is no precise formula that's set forth in the statute or in any regulation which says this much blight qualifies. So we are working within sort of the bounds of reasonable interpretation of the statute, and based on the hearing we had, the evidence before us, and the record, I'm satisfied that we can establish the requisite showing of blight to justify going forward. The second issue that has been brought forward does not directly relate to the act we're taking today, but it has sort of, I would call it a policy or a political issue about urban renewal. And I think it breaks into two points. One is checks and balances, and two is impact on budgets of sister jurisdictions. And the checks and balance issue, as I understand it, is that when we do these kinds of things and amend and expand an existing district, some people have felt that there needs to be some check on our unilateral authority to do so at a certain point. And the argument is that when you take an existing district and expand it, there are consequences to other taxing jurisdictions, and there ought to be some mechanism for them to be heard. And the related question is about the extent to which tax increment financing dollars are diverted for projects within a district and the timing by which taxes are returned to jurisdictions that are sharing in the investment in urban renewal. On that issue, I think that the legislative fix that we authorized and that the city negotiated with special districts and other partners cures those two issues. We have agreed, and Keith, I don't know whether it's been enacted into law or it's just a done deal, but either way, there was a reform package that the city endorsed in this current legislative session that in broad brushstroke says that when you attempt to expand an existing district by more than 20%, you've got to have the consent or involvement of your other jurisdictional partners, and provides a mechanism for accelerating the return of tax dollars to jurisdictions that are impacted. We played, as a city, a leadership role in crafting that reform package, and I think it directly addressed some of the concerns that have been raised in the past about both checks and balances and the impact on the bottom line of school districts, special districts, as well as, in fact, our budget. So as I look backward and I think about blight, checks and balances, and this notion of the timeline for returning tax dollars to the general funds of all the participating jurisdictions, I believe that we have acted responsibly in addressing those concerns. And in fact, I think that a number of the broad policy concerns as well as the specific legal questions have been addressed in a responsible fashion. So that's the past. The present is we now have to go through an exercise of adopting the amended and restated plan. And what struck me at our hearing is that with the passage of time, the coalition of voices in favor of us doing this has grown. Now, we heard from at least two neighborhood associations. We heard from the Portland Business Alliance. We heard from nonprofits. We heard from citizen activists. We heard from a very broad coalition. And they, in general, said move forward on this, and the projects which we have identified with Portland Development Commission as priority projects are critical, absolutely critical to our city's future. The two voices that were dissenting voices that I heard, and I think warrant some passing mention, were the League of Women Voters and the so-called Friends of Urban Renewal. What I have come to appreciate about the League of Women Voters in this debate is that they have some very clear boundaries in their views about urban renewal, some very clearly defined concerns about urban renewal generally. And what they have almost consistently done is argued that if there is a way to accelerate the closure of a district, that's generally where they think we should err, as opposed to extending the life of a district, expanding its scope and indebtedness. I respect the position, and they have been, it has been clearly articulated in this fight and in other times. I just don't share it in this case, but I respect where it's coming from, and I think that there needs to be a watchdog cautioning us against the potential excesses of how urban renewal is used. The so-called Friends of Urban Renewal, in my judgment, present a different situation, because the issues that I have heard them consistently articulate were, number one, insufficient findings of blight; number two, that the city has somehow overreached and it's going to cause the legislature to step in and somehow change the ground rules of urban renewal in a way that's going to hurt us. And number three, what we really need to do is renegotiate this deal and substitute their judgment for the judgment of the Portland Development Commission and the duly elected commissioners of this body as to where the money's going. On the policy question, I just don't think, with all due respect to some of my dear friends who are members of that group, that they have the standing to tell us how we ought to spend the money. We have a community process which has arrived at those conclusions. But on the legal issues, I think that at this point in time, that the Friends could actually declare victory. In adopting, as I hope we do today, the amended plan, we are, in fact, adopting comprehensive findings that meet, in my judgment, meet and exceed the statutory requirement of blight. And frankly, while I don't do land use, I've never been a land use lawyer, I'd be shocked if the LUBA did not find these satisfactory to the statutory test. And on the question of the claim that we've somehow overreached, I don't think the Friends of Urban Renewal give sufficient credit to this council for joining in a good faith effort in Salem to come up with a reform package which has been embraced by all of our jurisdictional partners. So I have to say, in all due respect to my friends who are members of this group, I'm not sure what's left to fight over. And indeed, as I thought about it more, I think that if they are to continue this fight, I think what they risk is snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, because I think they have every opportunity and every reason to now declare victory and to say that some of the concerns they raised have in fact been addressed by this council in a responsible fashion. So for me, that's the past and that's the present, but I want to say just a word about the future. These conversations often become kind of arid and dry, and we're talking about LUBA and legal requirements and these and statutes and burdens of proof and evidentiary findings. And I think we all go a little glassy-eyed in the middle of these discussions. But what I hope we never do is lose track of what's really at stake here. We are not seeking to amend and restate a plan for the sake of going through this exercise. We are seeking to do so because we are responding to a chorus of community needs and desires that would be addressed with this amendment, and they include people in Old Town Chinatown who felt that they have been left out of this process. They include people in the nonprofit and social service community who are pleading with us to not only build a resource access center, but to preserve affordable housing for the lowest income citizens in our community. And our jurisdictional partners who have asked us to step up and help meet some of their needs. We are responding to a set of community needs and concerns, which in good times would be compelling. But as I've thought about this, in the context of the current economy and the suffering which is occurring in our community, I think it is absolutely irresponsible for us not to act with haste to get this plan adopted and to move forward with the various programs and plans which have been carefully crafted with substantial community input. I read in the paper the other day that there is at least one group, the Friends of Urban Renewal, that have threatened to go and appeal what we do, and then regardless of what LUBA does, has stated they intend to go to a court, and by doing so, cause this matter to be extended another year and a half. Everybody has the right to use legal mechanisms available to them, and I don't, as a general matter, question people's motives. But I don't want there to be any doubt as to what the consequence would be of someone appealing this simply for the sake of making a point. And the consequence, in my judgment, will be substantial hardship to people who have no voice and will not have opportunities to greatly influence this process, but will be greatly hurt if we do not act. And I will tell you that while I appreciate the fact that this mayor has been willing to consider creative ways of financing the Resource Access Center, for an example, a casualty of having to finance the RAC outside of tax increment financing dollars at the front end may very well be compromising on the sustainability values which this council has said must be fundamental to the RAC. And I, for one, am not prepared to see us lose a LEED Platinum or gold certification simply over what has become largely, I think, an academic fight over urban renewal. I may be a stranger to some of the past history with respect to this district, but I am convinced based on the time that I have invested as a new member of the council, working with my colleagues attending hearings, that this is the right thing to do. And I am deeply troubled by those who have threatened to carry on a continued fight when really, if they pause to reflect, it may be time for them to declare victory and move on. So on the question before us, on the adoption of the amended and restated plan, I am confident that we have established the requisite showings that have been laid out by LUBA. I am grateful that our crack team, headed by Linda Mang and her counterparts at PDC, have worked so hard to come up with what I think are very compelling findings. I think it is time to end this fight and to move forward as a community. And I hope that in moving forward today and in sending a strong statement from this council that we as a team understand the importance of this action, that we can prevail upon some of our critics to put down their weapons and to join us in moving forward. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, there are a few things that Commissioner Fish didn't cover that I want to point out. Just kidding. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, I was not on the council when this expansion and extension was approved, and I don't support more than doubling or the borrowing or extending the expiration date. I understand that findings on blight are driven by general state definitions, and I appreciate the good work that the city attorney has done on this remand. I don't believe that the intent of urban renewal was to utilize every conceivable type of deterioration as blight in the urban renewal context, as these findings suggest. Based on the definitions contained in these findings, practically every corner of the city could be an urban renewal district, and I will be very reluctant to approve new urban renewal areas, especially in areas that have already had a turn. I realize that new legislation is being adopted by the state, which will make it more feasible for other taxing jurisdictions to be involved in the proceeds and formations of urban renewal areas. However, that does not apply to this district, especially until we can get it resolved. Until this last week, I haven't been involved in the discussions amongst various parties on the resolution of the lawsuit and the expansion of the district. I'm saddened that intelligent, good-hearted people on all sides of the legal and philosophical issues have not been able to reach agreement based on the principles of urban renewal. Urban renewal, to me, is a tool that should be used with surgical precision, and unfortunately, I don't believe that this amendment quite achieves that, and so reluctantly, I vote no.
Adams.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, it does apply. The state reforms do apply to this expansion. So just to correct the record there.
Only when it gets adopted.
No, it applies.
Okay.
It applies if we prevail, which is the only way this gets created. It applies. So no, it doesn't apply now because it isn't created. But it applies, just so you know.
All right.
Commissioner Fish, your summation of the issues before you voted was spot on and compelling, and I don't think I can improve upon it much other than to maybe use it as a jumping off point. The part where you talked about this is an issue that sounds bureaucratic and is incredibly complex and has decisions have occurred in sort of phases and at different milestones, and sometimes we forget about, as you pointed out, that there's a human cost to this delay, and one of the human costs is that we are unnecessarily starving some of our citizens of job opportunities when they need it most. We have a project, Commissioner Fish has a project ready to go, that will put construction workers back on the job in an industry that has around 35% unemployment right now. And the development industry constitutes about 30% of our economy, as a percentage of our economy. We are unnecessarily leaving unfulfilled the needs and requests of small businesses in this part of town because of these legal issues at a time that they, too, need the assistance most. They can survive if they had our assistance and access to capital that would be available if this goes forward. And folks that are being hit with the housing crisis and the shelter crisis, we would be able to get more of those good folks off the street when and if this moves forward. I'm very disappointed in my experience of this issue with some of with a group of four that the expanse and ambition of their objection continues to grow with time. And it's unfortunate because it's a very human cost that Portlanders are paying for. So I vote aye. Approved. We are adjourned. Is it, what time does it start? Yeah, I'm going to go to Metro.